Good morning. Y'all have a seat. Usually right now is about the time we would do a welcome where y'all get up and walk around and judge people for what they're wearing, all that good stuff. And we've decided today to not do that. And the reason why is this. It's not because that we don't care about y'all getting to know each other and see each other. In fact, we really desire that. We think that a lot of times people just go to church and they go and then they leave. And they never connect with the church. And so we think it's important, but today I don't want to stop what God might already be starting. Right? I don't want to put the brakes on now, especially after we've sung a song about his kingdom. So I encourage you, spend a few minutes while you're running to your cars, quick as you can, to say hello to someone, all right? That song, man, that song is good. And I don't know, you know, it's always tough because on my job I'm going, we get up here and maybe we lead a new song or we lead a song for a while. And it's hard to judge your reaction. It's really easy to want you to like it. That's the part of me that's probably not a good part of me. I want you to like that song and sing that song and respond to that song. But whether or not you are visually showing that somehow, I know that we are all responding to it somehow or the other. We're agreeing with it. We're disagreeing with it. It's moving us. I know Todd's always going to give me an amen. You know what I'm saying? Thank you, brother. So I know that. I can't do that. It's disrespectful for me to say that. But I'll take one from you anytime, bro. All right. No, but there's something so cool about that song. And in fact, the reason we started to do that song is because we were going to start this sermon series. And you know it quite well, because if you've been here for the past year, it's all we've done for the most part. It's the Sermon on the Mount, right? We've been going through the Sermon on the Mount for 8 years. And we're finishing it today. I'm going to finish it. We're going to clean it up, tie it up in a bow, go home. But man, that song encapsulates so much about the kingdom. It says, let your kingdom come, let your will be done. That all the earth would say and echo angels' praise that you are God, that you alone are God. That is the point of the kingdom. The whole point of the kingdom is the king. It's the king. It's really easy to go, it's about me. I want to be a citizen of that kingdom. No, no, no. It's all about the king. And guess what? That's good for you and me. I don't want to be the king. You want to be the king? I wouldn't be a very good king. Ask my wife. It does not work well. But today we think about this and we talk about it. We finish up the kingdom manifesto, the Sermon on the Mount. And this is what he's talking about, the kingdom. In fact, Matthew, the book of Matthew in and of itself is called the book of the kingdom, the gospel of the kingdom. So we've already seen Jesus say stuff in Matthew like the kingdom of heaven is at hand. The kingdom is here. We know that he did usher in the kingdom. But today, we're going to take a big chunk of the last chapter of Matthew 7, and we're going to finish it all out. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to start reading in Matthew 7, verse 13 through 27. Hey, if there's anybody that needs a Bible, raise your hand, and someone will bring it to you. Hopefully they will not injure you like Lambert's did to someone, and you will not file a lawsuit against us. Could you imagine that, by the way? Getting hit so hard with a hot roll that you had to sue someone? That would be a bad way. Could you imagine what the judge who gets that case is going to do? Like, come on. I went to law school for this. Yeah, that's what I think. All right, everybody got a Bible? Cool. Real quick, have you ever heard someone say this? You know, there's only two kinds of people in this world. You ever heard somebody say that? Have you ever heard how ridiculous the next few things that they say are? Right? There's Vols fans, and then there's everyone else. Go Vols. Which I actually agree with that one, but. Right? There's only two kinds of people in this world. There's nice people and mean people. And do you notice that if anyone ever says that, they always put themselves in the camp of the nice people, not the mean people? They always put themselves in the camp of the good ones. And it always seems to be that there's good and there's bad, such as Vols fans, good, others, bad. Right? So, see what I'm saying? I'd like to hear Go Vols, Carol, if you can next time. But, so, you hear that? Do you see that? That people do this a lot, and sometimes it's insane. Have you ever heard a crazy person say stuff like that? That you have no clue? There's people who love bananas, and there's people who love to fly helicopters. That's the only two times. What? Say what? See, to do this, we compare and contrast. You remember this from school? I'm going to get a little bit teachy today. Hang with me. through those moments. I'm really tired, and I promise that I'm not going to yell at you as much as I did last week. I'll yell at you a little just because it's just so fun. If you try it sometime. But I'm going to get a little teachy, and we're going to talk about some of these things. So compare and contrast. That's what we're really doing. We're saying that these two things are similar in a certain way. They kind of relate to one another, but they're contrasting and they're different. There's something that separates them very clearly, right? Men and women. Man, men and women are different. Have you ever noticed that? Husbands. I mean, come on, dude. Don't nod your head right now. Don't you do that. We see, compare, and contrast when we say something like, there's only two kinds of people in this world. And so what we're going to do is we're going to see this, Jesus doing this, in this last closing section of the Sermon on the Mount. And I want you to pay attention to a few things, all right? He's going to use a lot of symbolism through this stuff. He's going to use some metaphors that are going around comparing people to certain things. You'll see it coming. But pay attention to how ice cold Jesus is in this. It's like the warm, fuzzy, like sissy Jesus that a lot of people think Jesus is. This proves them wrong because he is hardcore in this section. So let's start reading. Matthew 7, starting in verse 13, we're going to read all the way through, all the way through 29, Jerry, I think. So Matthew 7, 13. Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many. You ever seen like a street preacher outside of a sports event? This is kind of what they say all the time, isn't it? For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. He goes on to say this, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will recognize them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a diseased tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will recognize them by their fruits. Not everyone who says to me, this is so cold, right? And not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. That's who he's saying is going to enter the kingdom. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? Did we not cast demons out in your name? We did many mighty works in your name. Look what Jesus says. God. And then will I declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. Everyone then who hears these words of mine, he's talking about the whole sermon, okay? He's talking about from Matthew 5, 1 all the way to Matthew 7, 29. He's talking about all of it. Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell. And hear this, and great was the fall of it. And when Jesus finished these sayings, the crowds were astonished at his teaching. Next one, there we go. For he was teaching them as one who had authority and not as their scribes. Let's just hit those last two. Jesus is talking differently than they'd ever heard. A scribe was someone who taught a certain doctrine or a way of thinking about the scriptures because they followed a certain rabbi. And all these different rabbis would have different interpretations. But the scribes were basically, they weren't speaking with authority. They were just saying, so-and-so said. This is from this person. But Jesus comes in and teaches them something completely different, something that they'd never heard before. He has authority to say something. And they were astonished, which the word astonished means a few different things. It doesn't just mean like, oh, that's not astonished. That's surprised. Right? But to be astonished is a mix of emotions. Surprise is one of those, but also confusion. Also happiness. Like all those things can be kind of equated with astonished. And they were astonished at his teaching. They'd never heard anything that. Now, it doesn't mean that they were like, wow, that teaching was so good that I'm gonna follow him forever. They didn't look at it and go, man, he has authority. He is God. He is Lord like we know he is. I'm gonna follow him. That didn't mean that they did that. They were just going, man, he just said that. I mean, that's pretty much what they said. Let's go back up here. I want us to look at some of this stuff. I want us to pick out some similarities through everything that we just read. And did you notice that it was all kind of broken up into little sections? All right, there was little stories, little vignettes that he was kind of talking about all the way through there. And they all have very big similarities. And the reason that we're doing this, there's got to be a reason, right? The reason we want to do this is because we want to know what the Sermon on the Mount is all about. Have you ever read the Sermon on the Mount? I mean, if you've been here for any of the past year, you've heard it, all right? But the reason it's taken that long is because it's so dense. It's only 3 chapters of the Bible. We just read half of one. Here's the other stuff that's in it. Chapter 5, the Beatitudes, huge. Blessed are those, right? The blessed. Blessed are those who are poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who are persecuted. And it goes, blessed are the peacemakers. It goes on and on and on. And to be blessed means not like I do something for God and he gives me a Ferrari, like a lot of preachers might tell you. That's false. That's not how God works. A blessing is to be favored by God. And to be favored by God is the best place you could ever be in. So he's saying, blessed are these people who are poor in spirit, right? Then right after that, we got this big passage, salt and light. Like these are all huge passages that if you've been in church for any amount of time, you've probably heard. Heck, even the world talks about some of these, right? But we've got salt and light. Then Christ is the fulfillment of the law. We're still in chapter 5. Then he gets in this whole section where he says, you've heard it said, but I say. This is all through chapter 5, the end of it. He talks about anger and lust and divorce and oaths and retaliation and loving your enemies. Man, the topics are stacking up quick, aren't they? Chapter 6 starts off and he starts talking about giving to the needy. He talks about the Lord's Prayer. That's a pretty big one, yeah? He talks about fasting. He talks about laying up your treasures in heaven, about not being anxious. Then chapter 7 starts, which we didn't even read the first 12 verses. And right there, it's judge not lest you be judged. So about judging others. Then it's ask and it will be given to you. Knock and the door will be answered. These are huge passages in church life, aren't they, church? In Christian world, these are huge. In fact, I studied this in college, in a secular college. Like we studied the Sermon on the Mount because so much of the Christian faith is encapsulated in these 3 chapters. That's huge, and that's why it's taken us so long. Right before this is the ultimate. The whole culture knows this, don't we? Like, it seems like everyone in the world knows this, the golden rule. That's biblical, right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The Sermon on the Mount is extremely, extremely, like, it's global. People know it. In fact, I mean, think about some of the stuff we just read. Have you ever heard somebody go, you'll know them by their fruits? Like, it's where actions speak louder than words. Hear that? Or have you heard a wolf in sheep's clothing? I mean, this is an impactful 3 chapters of anything. This is huge. And so because of that, especially when we've gone through it this long, or if you're just reading it, it is super, super, super easy to read through it and go topic to topic, anger, lust, oaths, retaliation, loving your enemies. And we make this big, long checklist and we say, all right, got to do this better. Got to not be angry. Got to not be lustful. Can't retaliate. Got to love my enemies. Can't check that one off yet because I really still hate some people. You know, we this is what we do. We see it as all these topics, but here's the truth. I'm a pastor. I get to preach occasionally. And here is something that I think about every time. There is always a main point to a sermon. Every sermon has a main point. Okay? There's one big point. One big walk away. And the Sermon on the Mount is no different. So, but we read it a lot of times and we just take it out this and take out this and take out this. And it's almost like seeing a puzzle, like getting a puzzle and just holding on to one piece of that puzzle. Well, that piece of that puzzle is a part of what? A greater picture. It's not like I can pick up that piece that is not an edge piece or a corner and look at it and go, oh, that's the third whisker of that cute cat on the box. No, we have to see all these pieces come together. But the interesting thing about a puzzle is this: every piece does come together, doesn't it? Every piece is cut perfectly, and it's almost it's crafted to be perfect, to make one big picture. So we want to know, what is the Sermon on the Mount about? And I think that what we just read on the screen will help us to see what it's all about. I'm going to be very honest. This is a confession to you. After last week, I was super humbled to get to preach here, right? I felt like God did great things in here, but there was this little touch of pride that got planted in my heart. And the thing is, I knew that God did last week. I knew that God moved in this place. It wasn't me, it was God who moved in this place. There's a little seed of pride that planted. So what did I do? I tried to recreate this week in preparing for this message. Like, man, God, I got to do good. I got to do good. I got to preach a sermon that everyone is challenged by, that everyone is moved by, that one that everyone loves. Why? Because deep down inside here, and I wouldn't have admitted this, but I want you to love me. I want you to think I'm good. So last night, I'd had my message prepared. I was about to go to bed. Midnight. And last night, God said, no. No. Don't preach that. You're wrong, actually. You're wrong in what you're about to preach to them. You went rogue on me, and you thought that you knew it all. You thought that you're smart because you have read the Sermon on the Mount. You thought you were smart because you think that you know better than other people, or you're smarter, or you can memorize more, or that you're good. But he said, you aren't good at all. I did this, and it's my word. You'll preach what I want you to preach. Now, I know I just took you into a little bubble that you're not used to being in, but I am standing up here and I am saying this. The reason I put it out there, and it's very important for our sermon today. The only difference about me on this stage and you in that seat is I'm standing and you're sitting. That's the only difference. There is not a pastor, a priest, a bishop in this world that's any better than any of you. You hear that? Pastors are sinners. Sinners who still deeply struggle with sin. And there was pride in my heart, and it got revealed to me, and it crushed me. And so bear with me today. And I really want to say bear with me because I want you to like my sermon, but bear with me today because there's some truth here that's better. God's word is more important than my sermon today. God's word is more important than any sermon. His sermon trumps mine. Do you hear that today? Let's tear into this. We're going to move pretty quick. We're going to compare and contrast everything. In verses 13 and 14, we see him use a picture of what? A path and a gate, right? And I'd said earlier that Jesus does this. There's two kinds of people in the world, right? Well, there's two types of paths. There's two types of gates that are at the end of those paths. One path is broad, which means there's a lot of people that can get on it, right? And the gate, right? It's easy to walk through. There's plenty of room for everybody to step through there. It's broad and easy. And it says that that path leads to destruction. But the other path and the other gate are said that they are narrow, right? Like the gate is narrow. The path is not easy, whatever order that's in, right? So we've got a broad and a narrow road. We've got an easy and a hard gate, something to get through. Compare and contrast. And what does he say? The people who are on the broad, easy gate, road and gate, what does he say? It ends in destruction. That's right. So what do we see? Compare, contrast, destruction. The next one is about beware of false prophets. And what does he say there? Like they're actually wolves with sheep's clothing on. On the outside, what does that mean? On the outside, they look like a sheep. But what do they look like on the inside? Wolf. Right? Why? Because they're wolf. Right, pretty simple. Looks like a duck, sounds like a duck, it's a duck. Right? So that's who they really are. And then he goes in on to this comparison as well of that they're like trees. Beware of them. They're going to kind of look like sheep. But their fruit's going to be a little bit different. So he uses this metaphor about trees. And he talks about how you can always determine a tree by its fruit. Think about it this way. Anybody like love, they're arborists, they love trees and stuff. I know Jason Pennington knows more than most people I know about trees. I don't know if he wants to know that much about trees, but he has to. Well, it's really easy to determine a tree sometimes by its leaf. That's a telltale. Like most of us probably would be able to pick out an oak leaf. If you love Canada, then you know what a maple leaf looks like. I don't know why, but I mean, they make good syrup. Hockey, but whatever. But what if you took the leaves off a tree and you had this tree standing next to this tree? Could you identify it by its bark? Could you walk up to a stump that somebody had cut off and there's two stumps next to each other? Could you, without a shadow of a doubt, know which type of tree each one is? No, that'd be tough, especially if you don't know anything about trees. But if you walk up to a tree and it has these red, delicious, shiny, beautiful fruit hanging off of it, you might have an idea, right? It's a pear tree. No, it's not a pear tree. Okay, I don't know trees. It's an apple tree, okay? It's an apple tree. An apple tree. You don't walk up to it if it has apples hanging on it and go, that's a pear tree. Why? Because it's stupid, right? You don't do that. It's an apple tree. If it has apples on it, then it is apples. And what Jesus is saying here is that there's going to be diseased trees and healthy trees. The difference between a diseased and healthy tree is that one produces fruit and one does not. A diseased tree cannot waste its energy and nutrients on making fruit. It has to take care of the roots. It has to take care of everything else to survive. A healthy tree produces fruit. And whatever fruit that comes off of that, you'll be able to identify the tree. And that's why he says this warning about beware of false prophets. Look for the fruit. Don't look at the leaves. Don't look at the bark. Because what we can know about what the roots really are, that's what makes a tree, isn't it? The roots. No roots, no tree, right? Starts with the roots. Amen? We can know what the roots look like when that fruit comes out. You make sense? Don't look on the outer appearance. Wait to see what comes from them. Wait to see what comes out. And then you'll know what the inside looks like, what is under the ground, under the surface, what the root looks like. So he gives this warning. Now, what does he say about it? What happens to the diseased tree, the one that doesn't bear good fruit? It's Paul Bunyaned, and it's thrown into what? The fire. Destruction and fire. Like ice water running through Jesus' veins, and it only gets more hardcore. Jerry, can we go to verse 21? Here we've got a picture of these two workers, these two followers, disciples. They're different. It's hard to kind of see it, but you'll see. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. That's the first person, right? That's the first follower here. Let's look at the second. On that day, though, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. That's good there. So we've got a picture of two different people. One of them comes up and says, I did the will of the Father. That's who gets to enter into the kingdom of heaven, right? The one who doesn't get to enter into the kingdom of heaven, and Jesus just stone cold with, is the one who says, who calls him Lord. Do you see that? They call him Lord twice. Anytime you see something in the Bible repeated, like neon sign, ding, bing, bing. Pay attention. Very important. Lord, Lord. They're saying, oh, we are your followers. You are our God, Lord, Lord. These people who think that he's Lord, they say, we did all this stuff for you, God. Man, I read my Bible today, God. We kept all the laws and all the rules, and I didn't smoke when I was a teenager, and I didn't listen to rap music, right? They're saying, we did all this stuff, and we did it in your name. Do you see how they say that? We did it in your name. It was for you. We did it in your name. And what does he say? I never knew you. Whew. Have you ever walked up to somebody? This is awkward, isn't it? When you walk up to someone that you know from like 5 years ago, and you think that y'all are like connected in a way, like you're all friends, buddies, whatever, and you walk up and like, hey, man, it's good to see you again. And you know, it's in their eyes, this like fear. And their face drops, and you know that they don't know who you are. What does that feel like? What does that feel like? Think about this. Think about how extreme this thing Jesus is talking about. These people have devoted their lives to do things for him, for God, for Jesus. And then he looks at them and goes, I never knew you. Get away. It seems like Jesus has switched gears here, hasn't it? We see Jesus as this love everyone hippie. I mean, that's kind of what people make him out to be. But then here he says, no, yeah, you've done all that stuff. That was lawlessness. All you did was lawless things. Get away from me. I never knew you. Think about walking up to the person you've devoted your life to and them turning around and looking at you and saying, get away from me. I don't ever want to see you again. Get away from me. So this is extreme, isn't it? And what's the result of these people? They're separated from God for eternity. They will not enter the kingdom of heaven. That's what he's saying. The last one is this. Jesus says, he starts talking about his words, and he kind of means the whole sermon. And what do we see a picture of? Two things. Two different people, two different men, two different houses, two different foundations. And two different outcomes. They're this. Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. When the storm comes, the rain fell and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. But, and everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was the fall. See, people would have known what he was talking about here because where he was around the Sea of Galilee, there was a certain time of year where the wind would like blow into the shore, and there was this, it was just a hot wind, whatever it was, some kind of climate deal going on. It'd blow, and it would make the sand turn, like it would just make it super dense. So the crust on top would be hard. And so many people made the mistake of going in and thinking, like, that's a good place to build a house. And so they'd build it. As soon as a storm would come in off the ocean, it would completely destroy the house. So people started to learn that you don't build it on top of the hard sand. You dig down a few feet and you get to the bedrock. So people would have known what's going on here. See, that's called context. We're trying to put ourselves in the moment. He's talking to us. Yes, I agree with that. But he's talking to somebody there too. And that is how we are going to get to understand what the whole sermon means. Because all this stuff is pointing to something. Every single thing. All those had something in common, didn't they? They all had a pattern that kind of they went along with. The sermon has one point, and it all comes down to who is he talking about? Who is this man? Who are these people? Who is the false prophet, the wolf in sheep's clothing? Who is the man that builds his house on the sand? Who is the one who says, Lord, Lord, but Jesus says, I never knew you? Who is that person? Who is the person who walks the narrow? Who is the person who walks the broad? Who's the person that walks goes through the gate that's hard? And who's the person that goes through the gate who's easy? See, the context here is so important. And we see it from Matthew 5:1 to Matthew 7:27. And it's this. Over and over and over, he's talking about the Pharisees. I'll get to that in a second. When you hear that whole, like, gate wide, or, you know, easy and all that stuff, it's hard, it's destruction and the narrow and straight. How many times do you go, yeah, I'm on that big wide road. I'm on that easy way. No one wants to admit that, do you? I don't. Especially us church folk. You know what we end up doing a lot of times? We go, oh, I'm on that straight and narrow. You know I am, but they aren't. And who? What kind of person do we usually think of? All right? What kind of person do we usually think of being on that way to destruction? Think about loose people, right? Gambling and playing cards and dancing. Old Southern Baptist's worst nightmare, right? We think about these people who cuss and are full of sexual sin. And I mean, we could think about over and over and over. We could put all these people on the road. But hear me out on this. He is not saying in any way that it's all the devil's people. It's all the evil people on that easy road. And all of you, you people who are doing the right thing, you who are doing the right thing, you get to come into heaven because you did the right thing. Not saying that at all, because it's about the Pharisees. It's not about the sinner. It's not about the tax collector. It's not about the prostitute. It's about the Pharisee. And guess what? The Pharisee is the good guy. See, the Pharisee was a sect of Jews in Jesus' time, and they were the conservatives, to use a word from today. They would definitely be pro-life. They're the people who did everything perfectly. From the time that they were young kids, they'd memorized the whole Torah. Like, they had fasted 2 days out of 7 every week of their life since they were 12. Every week. They knew the scriptures inside and out. They kept every sacrifice. They did every ritual correctly. They studied. They believed. They were holy in the sight of everyone around them. And Jesus says, they are the ones who are on the broad and easy road. Does that not frighten you? This is what happened at midnight last night. I was going to preach something like, build your house upon Jesus and trust in Jesus because things will be better. Or choose Jesus so you're not on the broad and easy path that leads to destruction. But he's not talking to the sinner and the person who's out there doing whatever the heck they want to. He's talking to the church folk. He's talking about you and about me. And if you start looking through all of the sermon, it starts to make sense. Like in Matthew 5, when he starts talking about anger, he says, you've heard it said, do not murder. But I say to you, anyone who has anger in his heart against his brothers already condemned. He's already convicted, already sentenced, already a murderer. You see it over and over, especially when he gets into these places where he talks about giving to the needy. He says stuff like, don't give to the needy. Don't give people to be generous to people in public. In fact, be so secretive about it that your right hand doesn't know what your left hand is even doing. He says about fasting, do not fast like the Pharisees. Do it in private. In fact, he even says, and ladies, you'll like this, like, do yourself up a little bit because you're going to start looking rough when you haven't eaten for a few days. So like, make sure you anoint your head. So put on some product, right? And wash your face so that you look fresh. It's that important because you don't want anyone to know that you've been fasting. That's what the Pharisees do out in public. See, the issue with the Pharisees was this. The issue with the Pharisees is this. Everything that they did was to prove this outer appearance. For whatever reason, approval of other men so that they could become powerful and famous, so that they could feel like they're doing the right thing. All they did was worry about the external. Do you hear that today? All they did was worry about the external. Now think about it. If all they worried about was the external, then the internal probably wasn't going so well, was it? And every single one of these little passages at the end of Matthew 7, what is it kind of pointing to? What do we see that's a similarity? In every single one, what is it? Beware of false prophets. Why? Because on the outside they look like a sheep, but on the inside they're a wolf. They're like a tree. They might look like this kind of tree, but you can't see the roots. So wait till the fruit comes out and then you'll really know who they are. There's a surface and then there's an under the surface. There's an outer and then there is an inner. He says, he keeps going and he says, these people who say, Lord, Lord, we've done all this stuff. They say with our outside of us, we start doing things. That's the outer part of us. We do this for you in your name. We do this for you in your name. And why does he say, I never knew you? It's because they didn't know him either. Because on the inside, the only reason that they were doing it was for themselves. And he says, build your house on the rock, not on the sand. Don't be deceived by this surface. Dig down a few feet. See, the common thing over and over and over is surface below the surface. Outer, inner. External, internal. And then when I heard this last night, I was just like, oh, that's it. That is it. Because now go back and think about the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the peacemakers. On and on. Every single one of those things, what makes you have favor in God's sight, what makes him look at you and say, you're a son, you're a daughter, what makes him do that is a posture of your heart, not the actions of your hands. God does not care about the outside, about the appearance. That's not what he judges. 1 Samuel 16 says this, 16 verse 7, if you want to look it up. He says it to Samuel, and he's talking about David and about Saul, and he says, Saul looks pretty. He looks like he's got it all going on, doesn't he? But God doesn't look at on the outside. People like what we see on the outside, hence Facebook. All right, listen, I'm sorry, but there's a rash of like in the driver's seat selfies, right? And what's the point of a selfie? Find the perfect angle, right? On the perfect day when my hair is looking fine, right? And you know, I better take a selfie right now or it's gonna look like a steel wool here in a second. It's humid today. And so on Facebook, we put these pictures up there of how we want people to see us, not who we really are. Who's going to go home today? I'm sorry, I'm going to pick on you women just a little bit. But who's going to go home today and take off all your makeup and put on your pajamas and like smear like icing all over your face and then take a picture of it and be like, I'm looking good. No one's going to do that. Why? Well, we've got image problems. Men do too. But we want people to see something good. We want people to see something better than who we really are. But the scriptures say that God doesn't care about the outside. He cares about the inside. The Pharisees did everything right. They did everything perfect. But on the inside, they were still as wicked, as deceitful, as prideful, and as dead as the next person. And here's the bad news for me and you. You ready? We don't preach bad news much, but here it is. There's this little part in Matthew 5 where it says this, that not one iota, which is a little dot on one letter of a Hebrew letter, not one iota, not one dot of this word, like the word of God, can be messed up if you want to enter the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus says this, in fact, your righteousness has to exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees to enter the kingdom of heaven. Do you know how bad of news that really is? Because I promise that not a single one of us in this room has righteousness that will exceed that of the Pharisees. Heck, even the Pharisees couldn't exceed their own righteousness. And we're not even close to righteous to the law. That's what that means. Right to the law, the Old Testament law. We haven't done that. We haven't done that. They were near perfect. Jesus said, you have to be even more righteous. Think about who he's talking to. Tax collectors, prostitutes, fishermen, shepherds, farmers. They're not necessarily the upper echelon of society, right? They didn't get to go to college. In fact, they had to drop out in kindergarten and go to work. They weren't smart. They definitely, especially when you're talking about some of them, were known, like this idea of tax collectors and prostitutes. This concept is to be known as the most evil, bad people in the culture. He's telling this to those people. To those people. How do you think that they felt in that moment? Whoa, 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 whoa. You're telling me that I have to be better than them? Then I'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Doesn't that sound like bad news? Until Jesus turns the corner and we see what has changed us forever and what this Sermon on the Mount is the key that unlocks all of it. And it's that Jesus came to fulfill the law, to transform the law. And by coming down to this earth and living perfectly, hear this, Jesus, his life exceeded the righteousness of the Pharisees. Jesus, if the Pharisees were as righteous as they were, but they're the ones walking through the big wide gate, the easy gate, who else could? Jesus walked the narrow. Jesus walked the hard gate. Trust me, that walk up Golgotha to be crucified, pretty tough walk. The path that led him to the cross and on the cross when God poured out his wrath and judgment for your sin and for mine right there, that's a pretty hard gate to get through and a pretty hard road to travel. Here's the crazy part. He did all that when you couldn't, and then he still says, I'm the vine, you're the branches, and through you, I'm going to grow great fruit. You're going to be a healthy tree, not a diseased tree who I'm going to throw in the fire. I'm going to make you a new tree. See, the whole Sermon on the Mount, you ready for this? We talked about it being puzzle pieces with all these little topics everywhere. You know what the picture looks like at the very end? It looks like our heart. It's a picture of our heart. And Jesus is saying, it doesn't matter what's on the outside. You have a dead heart. You have a rebellious, a deceitful heart. In fact, in the book of Jeremiah, God calls it like this. Jeremiah 17, 9 and 10. The heart, the human heart, is deceitful above all things. That means it's the most deceitful thing that there is. And that it is desperately sick. That sounds like a diseased tree. Sick. Who can understand it? Then God says this, I, the Lord, search the heart and test the mind to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his deeds. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. The Sermon on the Mount is about your heart, and it's written to the Pharisee. And me and you are really good Pharisees sometimes, church. We are really good at being Pharisees. I'm going to tell you what, if you believe that you can go to church enough, that you can do more good than bad, if you can just do enough things to please God somehow, that he might let you enter into the kingdom of heaven, you know what he's going to say to you? He's going to say, depart from me, I never knew you. Why? Because you're building your house and your foundation is in sand. And when the storm comes, trust me, it's not going to stand up to it. You know, a lot of people have said this, and this is something that just rocked me yesterday. But a lot of people think that this whole storm thing, and this is probably how I would have preached it if God hadn't like said something about it. But a lot of people think that this storm that it's talking about, that Jesus, the rain fell, the wind blew, that's a storm, okay? But a lot of people would say, well, we need to trust in Jesus because other things are going to fail us. And so when something bad happens, we've got a foundation in Jesus. This is true, but this is not what he means here. No. Because see, the storm, this heavy rain, these heavy winds, it's not talking about cancer. It's not talking about losing your job. That's not what the storm is. It's not talking about being betrayed by a friend or persecuted. No. The storm that he's talking about is the eternal wrath and righteous judgment of God on sin. And if you continue to build your house on your works, then when that storm comes, there's no matter how strong you think it is because you built it. It doesn't matter how sure you might be. If it's built on the sand, it will fall, and great will be the fall. Guys, this doesn't... We don't say this a lot because you kind of get scared that it's going to make people mad or strike a chord with them that's not good, but I have to do this because I love you. I just have to, but hell is real. We don't like talking about that, but hell is real. It's a road that leads to destruction. That's the destination. The tree gets thrown into the fire. The one who says, Lord, Lord, gets separated from God, and the house falls and it's destroyed. Have you ever been in a tornado zone? We went to Alabama a few years ago. When you say your jaw dropped, it did. I couldn't speak. The power of that tornado was absurd. It didn't just like knock houses over. That's kind of what you think about it doing, like making rubble. It literally wiped the earth clean. There was dirt and a few stumps. And before, we're in this neighborhood, and it used to be this huge, huge, like forested kind of little neighborhood with massive, old, beautiful hardwood trees. And now it's literally like a desert. It's just dust. Houses, who knows where they went? Who knows where they went? The storm destroyed it all. Great was its fall. And that doesn't compare at all to the house that's built on the sand. I'm making a plea with you today. If you trust in your works, if you trust in being a good person, and I'm saying this to you too, church, if that's what you're trusting in, then great will be your fall. And I don't want that to be your fall. I don't want that to be your destiny. I want you to see that there is a rock, and he is the rock of salvation that withstood the storm. Because on the cross, on the cross, he took the storm. He weathered the storm that you and me deserve to sit through. And in a moment, God's wrath poured over him like a tidal wave. He was separated from God. See, Jesus is everything in this passage. Not only is he the one who walked through the narrow gate and the hard road, but he's also the one who took the punishment for walking down the easy one. He's the one who actually did come and do the will of the Father, but he's also the one who took the punishment for the one who said, Lord, Lord, I've done all this stuff in your name. And when we're talking about a kingdom, one of the first things I said today, the kingdom is not about me and you, but a good kingdom is about the king that we have. And I don't know about you, but that's a great king. So church, this is for you, and we're almost done. Church, this is for you. A lot of times, you know where I'm going to go with this probably, especially if you've been in church a lot. You're going to go with, oh, he's just sharing the gospel. It's kind of like an invitation. He's going to invite people to trust in Jesus and believe in Jesus. I've heard that before. I need more. I want to get deep. I want to know more about Jesus. There is nothing more than Jesus. Jesus is everything. He's everything. I want more. I want to know God more. The light of the knowledge of glory of God is revealed in the face of Jesus Christ. I want to learn something deeper. Jesus comes and unlocks the secrets. Church, stop consuming Jesus. Stop consuming and realize that Jesus is everything, and you need him as much today as you did then, because you still don't have righteousness that exceeds that of the Pharisees. Only Jesus does. He is your righteousness. He is your everything. You want to grow in your faith? Trust in Jesus. Look to Jesus. Follow Jesus. Not go to church more. Not pray more. Not read the Bible more. Those things aren't bad. Trust in Jesus. And today, if you're in here and you've never, you might not be the Pharisee. You might not be that Pharisee. You might be somebody who could care less about God. Maybe you don't even believe about God. In fact, the only reason you might be here is because your wife dragged you here. Your husband dragged you here. Your kids wanted to come. Whatever it might be, if you think for one second that you're going to gain the favor of God by coming here, you are so wrong. If you think that being a good person is going to save you, you are so wrong. And the reason that I tell you that and confront you with that, and it's, I get it, it's hard to hear that you're wrong, but you are wrong, and here's why. Because there's a real hell. There is a real hell. And I don't want you to go there. For you, Jesus is everything. He will give you the righteousness that's not external and showy and works. It'll be inside. And then from that, guess what happens, church? The fruit. So I close with this. Jesus has authority. It says it at the end. He taught like he had authority. The reason why is because he does. He's God. Today, all I care about is that you leave this place and all that you've heard is that Jesus is everything. That he is the firm foundation. That no man laid, it wasn't us that laid it, only Jesus laid the firm foundation. He is the firm foundation. He is the rock. He is the kingdom. He is the king. And it's here and it's now. And he's offering you grace and he's offering you forgiveness. And even though God looks inside your chest, at your heart, and he sees nothing but wickedness, he responds completely different than I would. He sees things and he responds. Here's, like, I've got a daughter. Who has daughters? Anybody have daughters? Okay, daddies especially. Does your daughter not melt you? Does she not melt your heart? Like, my daughter can get through stealing a car and walk up to me and smile at me, and I'm like, that's one good kid right there. I love that girl. And if you know Kate, you know it's possible. But I'm so blinded by her beauty. I am. I'm so proud of her for so many things. And I've told her so often that it's the inside that counts. Do you hear that? Do you ever say that? Has that been said to you? All right. It's not the outside. And trust me, she worries about that because she's so girly and she wears clothes. I don't understand all the clothes she wears. It's crazy. But she cares a lot about it too. But I tell her, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You're already beautiful. Like, you're beautiful on the inside. We say it over and over and over. And it's because daddies especially are blinded. We're blinded to the fact that really on the inside, they are wicked. Man, that's tough to hear, isn't it? I'll probably get an email about that one. You call my child wicked. Yeah. I haven't said this in a while, but every single time me and Rachel have had a kid, you know what I say the first time I hold them? Oh, I love you, you little sinner. Right? We're all sinners. We are. We're born into sin. But we look and we see just only the good stuff. We melt when my daughter comes running to me. I don't care if she has literally just like gone around to the neighborhood and thrown, I don't know, toilet paper on everybody. She's been the meanest girl at school all day long. It's hard for me not to melt when she runs to me when I get home and grabs me and says, I love you, Daddy. I'm blinded. But guess what? God is not blinded. He sees through all the outside stuff and he sees straight to the inside. And what does he find? A wicked heart. Now, I love my daughter. And my love for her blinds me. But guess what? God sees exactly who I am. He sees exactly how my heart is. And what does he say? He still says, I love you. Church, that truth, remembering that truth, holding on to that promise and that truth will grow your faith more than any Bible study, more than any small group, more than any amount of prayer, knowing that Jesus loved you even when you hated him. It's everything. That's the gospel. That's good news. If you're in here today and you've never received Christ, believe today. Believe. Church, believe today. Believe. That's all I got. Jesus is everything. Are you with me? Man, let's pray.